Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, down to Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Audrey, I'm so grateful. Thank you very much. Again, you got us on the show without a glitch whatsoever, and folks are waiting because you've leaked that long joke for tonight. It's a great one. I've tested that on a couple of people, and it's one that's going to get a raucous response. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Jumble Justice Radio Show and the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We want to thank Johnny Cash again for taking us on that marvelous trip across the country where he visits 90 cities and states, and he's doing it hitchhiking with truckers. And we're going to mention Johnny Cash one more time in one of our early news stories tonight, one of our sort of crazy news stories, and I'll leave you with a suspicion about what we're going to be doing. Emily and Mike, thank you very much for joining us. It's stop laughing. You're still laughing at Audrey's joke, I can tell. It's a good one. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show is what it is every week. It has been for nearly 3 years now. We're going to be discussing news, events, issues, developments in this very interesting field of criminal justice. And sometimes it does present humorous circumstances that we need to comment on. Also, we have a news story tonight about everybody's talking about the CIA interrogations and whether or not CIA staff, agents, line-level people will be prosecuted or not for these interrogations. But one of these stories, the comments about the story are more funny than the story itself, so I'll reserve my comments about that until later. But our show is dedicated to these energetic and never-tiring police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States. What we try to do here is look inside criminal justice and take a close-up look at the criminal justice professionals as they perform their valuable practice and service to our communities throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. You're on Blog Talk Radio, and boy, if you haven't looked around on BTR for a while, take a look at that opening page and just scan some of those shows, and I'll tell you, there are people there that names you'd recognize. You'd literally recognize several hundred of those names right off the bat. They have their own show. One of my favorite folks is Michelle Malkin, and I just bought her new book. Can I say that, Mike? Culture of Corruption. Fantastic book. She's almost 90 pages of references, footnotes, and she's a real person. I used one of her books in one of my graduate classes called Invasion. And it is the it is a Bible, the first sort of breakaway book to describe what's going on with illegal immigration in the United States. The book's about 5 or 6 years old now, but still very good. If you want updates on that stuff, you probably know from listening to our show, go to immigrationcounters.com, immigrationcounters.com, and you can see some of that data change right before your eyes while you're watching it. And illegal immigration is costing us a fortune, and it has other dire consequences, and I'll comment on one of those things later on, too. But Alan Levy is the CEO of VTR, and we are so grateful to him. How does he do it? He keeps making this free, ladies and gentlemen. They're now one of the top 100 websites in the world, and you hit any kind of thing. And President Obama, by the way, used Blog Talk Radio last week. Did you see that? Yes, that he was talking there in the White House and sitting there with a guy with a computer, and he was broadcasting on VTR. So the president's discovered it, too, and is going to use it. You can use it. Any person, any interest group. It can be from cigars to astronomy, as I say, from darts to homicide to auto racing to ping pong, whatever it has to be. You can have your own show. You can broadcast live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. Yes, your friends and relatives in Germany and China, North Korea, maybe not North Korea, they can listen to you too. And I think you can broadcast who knows how many hours a week. Some people have a daily show. We have a weekly. It can be up to, I believe, 2 hours. Don't quote me on that. You may not want to start with that much time anyway. Anyway, these shows are archived almost immediately after they're over, so they can be replayed. And you've noticed that once in a while we replay a show. We did one last week with Danny Chandler concerning surveillance cameras, and he's just outstanding on that subject. And we may have him back at some time in the future to talk about what's going on in that area. I have some news stories about that tonight, too. And finally, England, is someone slapped them on the head and said, wake up and see what you're spending on surveillance cameras. And they're now starting to doubt the worth of these millions of cameras that they have. So get your own show. I guess that's the moral of the story here. Get done what you want. Tonight's show will be like it always is. It's going to be in the news a little bit. We'll talk about some news. And then we're going to talk about a very poignant and a really incredibly important subject, and it's going to be the children of parents who are serving time in prisons and jails. And we're going to listen to Nurse Rona Renner. She has a radio show called Childhood Matters, and this is a show for parents and all who care about kids. And she's going to interview Nell Bernstein. She's an award-winning journalist. She's author of the book All Alone in the World, Children of the Incarcerated, and she's a well-known writer. She's been all kinds of national publications, Glamour Health, Mother Jones, Salon.com, The Washington Post, and on and on and on, and very active. She's coordinator of the San Francisco Children of Incarcerated Parents Partnership, and what a noble work that she's involved in with that. Just think about that. You know, we did a book here with several people. The authors are Ron Edwards, Amanda Moon Thomas, Shannon Scott, Stacy Sumoto, and Sherry Warnock, and me. I was one of the authors. The book was called Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice. And some Amanda Moon Thomas, she had an article in there that she wrote on prison nurseries. And we actually have nurseries for mothers and babies, as long as they're not serving longer than 18 months. Ohio has one of those. I think there are about six others in the United States. But here's a matter where they're trying to do something about the children of incarcerated parents and allow that bond to establish between mother and child. So we'll be talking about that as the major feature item on the show. You're listening on your computer. You already know how to do that. Sometimes people listen on their cell phone. You can do that, too. If you call into the show during the news segment, we'll certainly accept your call, and that call-in number is 347-996-5983. It's 347-996-5983. We can hold five calls at a time, and everybody can talk to each other, and once in a while when we have a group sort of session, that that actually happens. Well, Audrey, we're to the point now where we need to listen to that blonde joke, and I love this joke, and I'm sure our folks are going to enjoy it tonight. Audrey, go ahead with your joke.
Professor Haley, This may be one of my better blonde jokes since my condemnally still cannot stop laughing about it. I like it too. Here it is. Two bowling teams, one of all blondes and one of all brunettes, charter a double-decker bus for a weekend bowling tournament in Atlantic City. The brunette team rides in the bottom of the bus. The blonde team rides on the top level. The brunette team down below is whooping it up, having a great time, when one of them realizes she doesn't hear anything from the blondes upstairs. She decides to go up and investigate. When the brunette reaches the top, she finds all the blondes frozen in fear, staring straight ahead at the road, and clutching the seats in front of them with white knuckles. She says, "What the heck's going on up here? We're having a grand time downstairs." One of the blondes looks up and says, "Yeah, but you've got a driver."
Okay, the blondes were looking for the driver. Okay. Yeah, that was a very good one, Audrey. Thank you very much for that joke. But that is a keeper, as we say. Let's put that one in the top of the stack. We may even reuse that one in the very near future. All right, ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, and we have a news story tonight about guns in the community. But the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms wants the gangbangers and the street criminals and the street thugs to hear this public service announcement they have concerning firearms.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
It certainly is, and I hope that message falls upon the correct ears and those folks act accordingly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been passing along green tips, and I'm not. It's a long story, but a discovery has been made. If you can actually ask me for the number, but a discovery has been made that we can actually now install some equipment in our showers and home, our showers and bathtubs, where we will be able to drink our shower water. Now, if you don't mind a few plants and are part of this. There's two or three different kinds of shrubs and plants that they have to put in your shower. So there'll be a little, refitting in terms of making all this this work. But that's not actually my tip for tonight, but I thought that was a marvelous story. What an idea that you can drink your own shower water. Now, here's one I didn't think of, a green tip. Keep in mind, we're trying to save the planet for somebody. I'm not sure. Anyway, this one's called Rent a Film. This is tip number 901 in the marvelous book, Esmond Floyd's book, 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. So this says, instead of buying DVDs of your family's favorite films, rent them from a DVD rental store, website, or your local library. Even better, watch films on pay-per-view to cut a waste out altogether. Now, you know, I don't mean to be critical of these tips, but this one gets a little bit complicated. Who's keeping the big calculator in the sky to show that we're using less CO2 or producing less CO2 this way? Because you got to go drive. I guess you could bike or walk, but that takes, breathing, heavy breathing too. So you're releasing CO2 into the atmosphere. So depending on how far away your local library is, your DVD rental store, this could get kind of tricky. So, go to one of these green sites that allows you to calculate carbon footprint by almost every activity that you can do and figure this one out. But it sounds like a good idea at first, but then again, it might not be. So, I need some scientific evidence on this one about renting a film as opposed to buying one. And then if you want to see it more than once, I mean, that's even more of a problem. But anyway, it's kind of an interesting idea. All right, let's go to our news here tonight, and I think you're going to enjoy some of these stories. And let's flash back to something here I thought was kind of interesting relative to Johnny Cash. Some of you are perhaps old enough to remember Johnny Cash's rockabilly song called One Piece at a Time. Anybody remember that song? What happens here is that Johnny Cash works in a factory from like 1949 to 1973 in Detroit, and he wants a Cadillac. And certainly he cannot afford one. So what he decides to do is to steal this Cadillac one piece at a time over all these years. So normally he carries it out in his great big lunchbox. He's got a big lunchbox he, you know, purchased for that purpose. But he can't do that. Sometimes he takes it out in his friend's little mobile home type of trailer. But at the end of all this time, he gets his Cadillac, and he's driving around, and he, you know, his wife wants to take his wife a ride in it, and they don't know what year is it. Is it 49, 59, 60? Get the point? So anyway, here's the story. By the way, someone did in Nashville, I believe it was Nashville, yes, Nashville actually did build Johnny Cash that car with that exterior. In fact, if you go to Wikipedia, everybody's encyclopedia on the net, you can see a picture of that car if you type in one piece at a time and take a look at the background of that song. But here's a guy, John. He's an assembly line worker in a factory in Chongqing, China. That's how you actually pronounce it. Had always wanted his own motorbike, but he couldn't afford it. So he started stealing parts from the factory warehouse, and he assembles them at home in 2003. This is in the Chongqing Times. He says, I don't have much money, so I came up with the idea of taking the parts home and assembling them on my own, says John. After 5 years, he had finally built himself a brand-new SUV motorcycle and proudly started driving it on the road. But almost immediately, he was pulled up by the police, who discovered that he had no driver's license or paperwork for the bike. John admitted the theft, and he was fined the equivalent of £440, and he was put on probation for a year, and then, of course, he had to return the motorcycle to the factory. What a sad story. You know, almost want a reward. There's a picture of it, by the way. If you go to Ananova.com, I didn't get it from Xinhua, the Chinese national newspaper. I got it from Ananova.com. You can actually see the bike. Nice-looking bike. There was another story in there at the same time about, China's a large country, so you could get confused with so many people. Two women are working on an assembly line. I guess they worked beside each other for years, and they finally discovered they were both married to the same guy. Incredible, isn't it? Okay, let's go back and take a look at some of these other news stories. And, boy, there are some good ones here going on tonight. This is one that's kind of interesting. Here's a case where L.A. County prosecutors said they're going to seek the death penalty against one of these gang members who's accused of shooting a star high school football player. He shoots him in the head. He leaves him on the sidewalk to die. And this is near the guy's home. The accused is Pedro Espinoza, age 20. He faces a special circumstance allegation that he killed the victim, Jamil Shaw Jr., 17. To further the activities of a criminal street gang. A lot of shootings over street gangs. But Mr. Espinoza, is an illegal immigrant. An illegal immigrant committing murder in Los Angeles? I don't think I've ever heard of that. About 90% of the murder warrants are in that category, by the way. It was released from jail the day before the shooting, which galvanized an effort to repeal a 30-year-old policy that prohibits the Los Angeles Police Department from stopping people solely to learn their immigration status. In other words, what the LA police do essentially is nothing if you're an illegal immigrant. So this guy was an illegal. They turn him loose, never check his status, and the next day he murders this fine young man who was destined for, certainly a college scholarship and a college education. But isn't that something? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think you've heard about cash for for clunkers, right? How about cash for convicts? Have you heard this story? It's in the Associated Press. The federal government said about 3,900 economic stimulus payments of $250 each this spring were sent to prison inmates. Prison inmates are generally ineligible for federal benefits, but 2,200 inmates who were not incarcerated in any of the 3 months before the recovery package was enacted got to keep their checks because they were eligible under the law, says Mark Lassiter, a spokesman for the Social Security Administration. The other 1,700 checks, that was a mistake, he said. Those checks were sent to the inmates by mistake because government records did not show that they were in prison. Wonder how good these government databases are, right? Let's not talk about national health care. Okay, but that's kind of interesting. All right, the next story is this one about the Mr. Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri, or something like that. He's a 9/11, according to the 9/11 Commission report, he was the mastermind of the October 12, 2000 attack on the U.S. Cole, the ship that killed 17 U.S. sailors. He was the target of an unauthorized CIA interrogation technique that had not been legally vetted, according to the Justice Department. You know, Eric Holder is considering right now, he's doing reviews and reports of whether or not these agents ought to be prosecuted for what they did. Now, I hope you're holding under a seat, and this one almost brings tears to your eyes, but the CIA officers actually blew smoke into Nashin's face, according to the report. Yes, they described the smoke blowing as one of several unauthorized or undocumented techniques that it had discovered in these isolated incidences. Interrogators in December 2002, he and another smoked cigars and blew cigar smoke right into Nashiri's face during the interrogation. I cannot believe it. Now, the interrogator said there was a reason for that. They said they really weren't blowing smoke into his eyes. They were smoking cigars to cover up the stench in the room to help keep the interrogators alert late at night, and a strong cigar would probably do that. Another agency interrogator admitted that he also smoked cigars during two sessions with al-Nashiri to mask the stench in the room. He claimed he did not deliberately force smoke. Now, can you believe that somebody that blew up the 17 sailors on the coal, we certainly wouldn't want to ever have anything like smoke going into their face. And you know that they say one of these CIA interrogators, awful as it is, threatened to kill his children if America was ever attacked again. These are the people who would kill your children in a second and not even think twice about it. But it goes on and talked about, you know, somebody actually stepped on one of his shackles once, stepped on his shackles, and it made his ankles hurt for a minute. But this is really, really terrible. We need to stop that type of interrogation for sure. Right, Mike? I don't think Mike says that. Mike, you're a little harsh about this interrogation business, and certainly we're not going to let you join the CIA. You're in a good position right there where you are. So let's take a look at a couple other news stories before we get to our feature item for the night and talk about the children. The parents are in prison. Here's another long article about the stimulus checks, just cash for cons. Just unbelievable. More details about it. 23 inmate recipients in Massachusetts mentioned in yesterday's Herald are a prisoner convicted of first-degree murder, three prisoners jailed for second-degree murder, and five convicted rapists, according to the Department of Corrections. They got stimulus checks. I don't think they get to keep them, though, which is good. Very glad that that's not going to happen. What about this story? Can you believe this? CCTV cameras in London and in England, but particularly in London, they're finally finding out that they don't work. If you go to Great Britain and if you've been to London, you're going to see cameras all over the place. I think London itself has about 1 million. And although one estimates the total of 4.2 million for the nation, for Great Britain, here's some details about what's happened. Yet there's plenty of evidence that people are not safer because of the presence of CCTV. Studies have argued convincingly that money is better invested in improved street lighting and more uniform police patrols. You can bet on that. The efficacy of the cameras as a crime prevention tool is at least questionable. Detective Chief Inspector Mike Neville of Scotland Yard says that in London, just one crime is solved a year. Are you listening? One crime is solved per year by every 1,000 CCTV cameras. CCTV played a role in capturing just 8 out of 269 suspected robbers across London in 1 month, many of whom might have thought twice about committing a crime had there been a policeman about in some area. But these articles just go on and on, and people are finally saying they're a waste of money. Here's another article that talks about the same thing, plus other circumstances and other places, but they just won't stop in England. And the average Brit is photographed about 450 to 500 times a day by these types of surveillance cameras. They have the ones that read your compassion and all this. Well, what about this story? Hawaii is going to take their prisoners back from the state of Kentucky. Hawaii has shipped 168 female inmates to a privately run Kentucky prison, and they've been using the service for quite some time because it's a lot cheaper for them than to build a facility. And the facility is run by Corrections Corporation of America, which is the largest private prison, not a public prison, a private prison, but it operates within the state of Kentucky. And what they're finding out, because Eastern Kentucky is one of the poorest regions in the United States, beautiful part of the country, the prison was welcomed by local residents who were desperate for jobs. So Hawaii sent inmates to Kentucky to save money. Housing an inmate at the Women's Correctional Center in Hawaii costs $86 a day compared to just 58 bucks a day and a few cents in the Kentucky prison, not including the air travel. These Hawaii investigators have found that at least five correctional officers of the prison, including a chaplain, and there's a punchline to this, you won't believe, had been charged with having sex with inmates in the last 3 years, and four were convicted. Now, this is kind of interesting. In Kentucky, this is a misdemeanor offense for the prison staff to have sex with an inmate. That is a felony crime in most places. But that's just incredible. And, this is a private prison, and private prisons are popular all over the place. Mr. Friedman said, Governor Linda Lingle of Hawaii, a Republican, said that bringing prisoners home would cost hundreds of millions of dollars that the state does not have. But prison overcrowding led them to send these inmates to Kentucky. Now, here's the real kicker. This is a woman's facility. And they found out that 81% of the Otter Creek prison workers were men, and 19% were women. That just astounds me. That's not usually the case in a woman's prison. But can you imagine that? That actually going on. Here's the article about drinking your shower water, but it's kind of technical, so I think we'll run over that one tonight. Another one here about England's declaring certain words illegal. That's really funny, but kind of a long article. Let's look at one more here, and then we'll go to our feature for tonight. Because I know you're interested in hearing about children whose parents are in prison. It's really something. Colorado Springs, it's a nice little suburb in Colorado. In Colorado Springs, not a suburb, but to Colorado Springs, the police department is going to start selling their guns, their confiscated guns. And if they're not needed for evidence in a trial or something like that, they say the sales could net as much as $10,000 a year from the firearms they take. I bet they get one from an illegal immigrant every now and then. And, of course, some people just think it's absolutely crazy. One of the town officials says every penny counts and we need the money. Another one says this is the worst thing that we could do, to be putting firearms in the hands of people. Because you know how those guns are. They go off by themselves sometimes, right? But anyway, that's not the first time this has ever been debated in the United States. But in fact, they do sell guns. If you want to buy some stuff from police property rooms, by the way, go to policepropertyroom.com, and it's sort of like eBay. You can buy all sorts of things that haven't been claimed by people but have been found all sorts of stuff. So very interesting interesting kind of thing. New York City, I don't know if we talked about that last week. No, we didn't. But they did a crackdown on cell phones and people talking on cell phones. It's incredible the number of accidents that are caused by that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's think about this subject of children in prison, or children's parents in prison, and what that does to a family and what you do about it. This is a very good interview with the correspondent, Nell Bernstein, and you're going to enjoy that. But I have to comment that as you listen through this whole thing, the one thing that you never well, you almost never hear is anything about what caused this particular criminal behavior. And you never hear them talk much about victims. I mean, it's always like the plight that life has caused for these criminals. And certainly it is, but I think some of them, most of them, the research would show, made a choice to commit a crime. They looked at the potential gain and weighed the costs, and in the balance they decided to go one way or the other. But I hope you enjoy this. I don't think we're going to be able to hear all the interview, because you'll have another guest come on too, and there'll be phone callers, people call in who have been in prison, and they're going to be talking about that. So I think you'll enjoy this.
KISQ, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose. Welcome to Childhood Matters on 98.1 KISS FM.
Presented by Childhood Matters Incorporated.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. In our society, there are too many innocent children who are suffering because their parents are in prison. The depth of their pain is hard to imagine. For the most part, our penal system does not take into account the needs of children. And the system is in desperate need of repair if we're to stop the cycle of imprisonment from generation to generation. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here Sundays to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, child care providers, big brothers, big sisters, or anyone who cares for and about children. All Alone in the World, Children of the Incarcerated is a book by Bay Area author Nell Bernstein. Here are a few statistics from her book. 1 in 33 American children overall and 1 in 8 African American children has a parent behind bars. 1/2 of all boys who have a parent in jail or prison will also wind up serving time in prison. Fueled by addiction and incarceration, 4.4 million children live in grandparent-headed households, and nearly 2/3 of children being raised by single grandmothers live in poverty. Foster care is one of the best predictors that a child will wind up behind bars. One study of more than 700 teens in foster care found that 60% of boys and 41% of girls had been arrested by the age of 17. As I read the book All Alone in the World, I was aware of my constant state of anger and sadness as stories of children being overlooked, ignored, neglected, and abused by the system were revealed on each page. Yes, some were living in unhealthy circumstances prior to the parents' arrest, but without getting the attention they deserved, their circumstances often grew worse. This is a very complex subject. And today, our focus will be on the ways children are treated when a parent is arrested and sent to prison. We'll discuss what we can do as members of their community, as relatives, neighbors, or teachers. It's a subject that isn't talked about enough, and yet too many of us know a child who has a parent in prison or on parole. Today, as always, we want to hear from you. Call us and tell us about your experience with the penal system or your experience as a grandparent or relative caring for a child who has had to face the trauma of having a parent in prison. The lines are open, toll-free, 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-KIDS. We really want to hear from you. So joining us now, we have in studio two wonderful guests. We have Nell Bernstein. She's an award-winning journalist and the author of the book All Alone in the World, Children of the Incarcerated. Her writings have appeared in numerous national publications, and she's the editor of Children of Incarcerated Parents, A Bill of Rights. She's the coordinator of the San Francisco Children of Incarcerated Parents Partnership. It's a coalition of social service providers, representatives of government bodies, advocates, and others who work to improve the lives of children. Nell works as an editor for Pacific News Service in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us, Nell.
Glad to be here.
Also with us is Karen Shane. She has over 25 years of experience working with and for prisoners and their families. She's the co-director of Legal Services for Prisoners with Children. It's a nonprofit legal service organization dedicated to advocating for the human rights and empowerment of incarcerated parents, children, family members, and people at risk for incarceration. In 2005, she received a social justice fellowship from the Vanguard Foundation. Karen is currently on the Community Adjunct Faculty of San Francisco State University's Master's in Public Health program. Karen, welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Let's start off with Nell. Tell us why you spent 5 years looking into these heartbreaking stories of children who were separated from their parents due to incarceration.
Well, I think initially I came to it less from an interest in criminal justice per se than from some questions about family. I was I spent most of the 90s at Pacific News Service editing a youth newspaper, and the 90s, you might remember, were the family values decades. It was the 94 Republican convention, and we kept hearing that the threat to our children was a lack of family values. Meanwhile, I was spending my time with kids who valued family tremendously, were fighting to hold on to family, but were facing some pretty intense pressures in that effort. And as I spoke to young people over the years, incarceration was a thread that just kept emerging as one of the things that was really straining their families and limiting their capacity to have families. And then I was doing some reporting on foster care, and I met a kid named Ricky, and I asked him, as I always did, how he came to be in foster care. And he told me that at 9 years old, he had been home with his mother and his baby brother, and the police had come and taken his mother and left him alone with the baby. And this young man spent 2 weeks taking care of the baby, taking the baby for a walk, until finally somebody noticed and called Child Protective Services in that instance. And I got stuck on the question of how a child could be that invisible within a system that affected him so much, and that is really what began my reporting.
You know, that story's in your book, and I just kept trying to imagine this young boy taking care of his younger sibling and no one showing up and no one noticing.
Well, you know, it's funny. I carried that story for several years, thinking it was one of the most remarkable stories I'd heard in my reporting on young people, and assuming it was unusual. Once I began formally reporting on children of incarcerated parents, I kept hearing it. I met a number of kids who, for one reason or another, had been literally left alone. And that's, why I called the book All Alone in the World.
Yeah, and those stories are really hard for us to hear, but essential for us to hear. I think that's part of why I'm so honored that you're here with us today, is that, you know, for many of us, we may know someone who, a child whose parent is in prison, we may not even know that. But I want everyone to sort of open up their vision and take a look around them and realize there are a lot of kids out there who are hurting. So thank you for that. We'll keep talking. Karen, you've worked with mothers for a long time now. Can you tell us something about, maybe something our listeners don't know, about what mothers go through when they lose connection with their babies or older children when they're in prison?
Sure. I actually think that most of your readers, at least those who are your listeners, at least those who are mothers, probably do know what it's like, because mothers who are in prison are really, in fact, no different from mothers anywhere else. And when I hear the story about Ricky, which I think is an extremely moving one, I picture his mother, who was probably frantic during that time, not knowing where he was, not being able to provide for him in the way that she knew that she had to. And that it's that separation between mothers and fathers and their children that I think is one of the most difficult things to deal with when it comes to incarceration. Every single mother I've spoken to in prison, their concern, while they, of course, want to know when they're going to get out, what their medical care is like and all of that, also are very, very deeply concerned about their children. And the biggest pain they have is that pain of separation. So there, as with any family, when a family is separated, both sides of that separation feel it so deeply.
Yeah, and, this is where the system is very complex, you know, because we have a society where we're really punitive focused, we're punishment focused, and
I know maybe as we talk today, you can talk about programs that are starting to look at the victims, the children, you know, looking at what they need and what the parents need also, so that bond is continued, even though there are walls between them. So I really look forward to hearing also some of the programs that are actually changing. I'd like to, again, invite people to call us. The lines are open, 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. If you've had an experience, if you know someone who's had an experience with a parent in prison, what it's been like for the children, and anything that you think would be helpful. I'd like to talk with Tony now. Tony's from Oakland. He's on our live line. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining this conversation.
Not at all.
So what would you like us to know, Tony?
Well, I've been just listening in, and it's quite an interesting conversation. It brings up a couple of things for me. I know as a father, you know, it's been I've been seeing the effects of, you know, how I've been, how incarceration has affected my kids. And, but I just want to go back a little further, just like how I was affected, because my mother, I've been affected by incarceration since I was in kindergarten, because my mother went to prison in and out while I was a youngster, and vividly I remember counting days. One time she did some time in CRC, and they put me in a foster home right across the street from the prison, and that's where I first learned how to write, and I was in kindergarten there, and
wow.
I was with some abusive foster parents who had their own kids and treated me like, you know, didn't treat me too good, broke
yeah.
my arm, everything, you know.
Aww. Tony, so, what's CRC? What is that?
CRC
yeah.
is a prison for women.
I see. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you can remember very deeply the experience of being, you know, five years old, and knowing your mom was nearby, but did you have much access to her?
No. Not at all.
Not at all. Now, Tony, you know, is talking about something that you heard over and over and over again. What helped young children when they don't have access? What do we do?
They need to have access. I think that there's a lot of emphasis right now, for example, on mentorship that we can, and I don't want to be entirely negative about that. The president has a mentoring initiative for children of prisoners. It's the first time they've been visible at the federal level, but I think we need to understand that you can't take away millions of parents and replace them with mentors. The idea that a child living across the street from his mother wouldn't have anybody to take him across the street and see her, it is crazy. And in California, we put most of our women prisoners in particular in Chowchilla, which, you know, if you were to sort of take a map and try to find the place as far as possible for most of the kids, you'd pick Chowchilla. So here and nationwide, most kids never see their incarcerated parent. And when I asked them what they needed, they were so clear on that. Of course, they need to be well cared for in their parents' absence, but they need their parents incarcerated or not.
Tony, what helped you survive, I guess is the question.
Well, I'm a survivor now, but I had a tough road. You know, I had to do my own bout of going through incarceration. You know, as a youth, I started going to juvenile hall around 14 years old. And then after that, you know, I started just graduating to county jail, then to prison, and then in and out of prison, you know. And I had a few good runs in between there where I was functioning, but basically it was the same stuff. And I went through all the same things that my mother did with addiction, with all the different things, and that took me all the way to like 27, and when I finally paroled in like 94 or 95, I think it was,
yeah.
I had a 13-year sentence, but the Center on Juvenile Criminal Justice came in on my case and helped get an alternative to alternative to help persuade the judge to suspend the sentence and let me go to Walden House.
How long have you been out now?
I've been out for 10, 12 years.
Congratulations. That's really, really something. And how do you keep yourself, you know, out of that cycle? What are you doing to keep yourself, you know, on the track you want to be?
Well, now I'm a community organizer, and I work with youth. And so giving back, you know, is a, you know, is a key thing for anybody that's in recovery or, you know, this, you know, making transition. Giving back is one thing that's, you know, that's important because it's a feeling of, you know, you doing something positive with your life, and you're giving back, and it's rewarding. And if you could just help one youngster not make, you know, some of the mistakes that you make, because some youngsters are going to have to bump their head. But even so, when they bump their head, just to have someone there who can relate to them and who can be there for them and just try to support them through these tough times, because we all, a lot of us, is just products or victims of our environment.
That's right. Karen, I'd like you to say something about that, too. This is the cycle that Tony is bringing up, that he was a product, a victim of, you know, the environment he grew up in.
Right. The thing is that now in prison in California, there are over 11,000 women. Most of them are in for nonviolent drug-related crimes. And most of them, frankly, don't need to be in prison. Even the department, the California Department of Corrections, has made that determination by now. I don't know Tony. I know Tony. I don't know his mother. But I'm willing to bet there was some other way to deal with the problem than putting her in CRC, which is down in Southern California, when Tony's from at that time was living in San Francisco. And that's not right. That's really a child being kidnapped, or in this case, the mother being kidnapped, and it's the same conclusion. And I think that really the bottom line is there has to be some other way of dealing with this so that people don't have to, the women don't have to be separated from their children.
Yes, thank you so much. You know, Tony, have you seen Nell's book, All Alone in the World? The book that she wrote?
Yeah, I see. I haven't got a chance to read it yet, though.
Okay, I'm going to send you a copy. And because you're working with other people and doing amazing work, it sounds like, knowing how to take what you went through and use that experience to help others, I'll give you a copy. You can pass it on to anyone you know who you think, you know, it might help open their heart about this situation. And I just appreciate so much that you called in to say what you're doing, and also that you've been able, sounds like, to do a lot of healing around what happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a process.
Yeah, it's a process.
You know, it's a process. And now what I'm doing, and that is important for the listeners to know, is that I'm mentoring with youth, and we have, and it's real important because we're going up to Juvenile Hall up in Cap Sweeney and in San Francisco mentoring the youth. And we've been doing that for some time, but now we are getting ready to institute an internship program so when they come home, because we know it's a problem, because everybody's dealing with the issue of, you know, but that is one issue that's been real hard, is reentry. How do you support the kids when they get out after being in CYA or juvenile hall, where they've just been warehoused, and they have all this, you know, youth in them, and they just questioning a whole lot of different things, and then they're going back to the same environment.
Right. How do you help them when they come out?
How do you help them?
So if people want to get involved with what you're doing, where can they go? Is it through, what program is it through?
Well, it's through All of Us or None, and you could call me at 415-255-7036. Again, 415-255-7036.
7036,
extension 308.
Thank you so much, Tony, and keep listening to the show.
Right on.
I appreciate it. All right, let's take another call. We have Troy Lynn and Gilroy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for waiting.
Thank you.
What would you like to add to this conversation?
Just that I have been through it, and it's not easy. being a single parent and having another parent incarcerated and your kids are so little.
Yeah. How old are your children?
I raised my baby from 2.5 weeks old until 3 years old on my own.
Wow.
I have another one I did it with, too. And this one was not easy. Not easy. I put myself through school since then. I am a certified nurse assistant.
Wow.
And I'm still supporting my kids on my own. Daddy's out, but he came home very sick, liver, all that stuff.
Nell, is that a story that you've heard a lot of when,
the person
comes back, Nell, what it's like for the family?
Yeah, and that, I think...
Oh, it's stressful. And I wish I would have known about this book a long time ago, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to see if I can afford to buy it.
No, I'm going to send you a copy. Let's hear what Nell, the author, has to say for a minute. Go ahead, Nell.
Well, you know, the way I organized the book was by looking at the criminal justice sort of circuit from arrest through reentry through kids' eyes. And reentry was one of the sort of most surprising and heartbreaking chapters to research. I looked at a family in Mobile, Alabama, a woman named Dorothy Gaines and her kids. She was actually a nurse's assistant who got a very long sentence, later got for drug conspiracy. There was very little evidence that she was involved with drugs in the end, and she got clemency after 6 years. So her kids, who had literally stood on the corner with a sign with her photo on it, asking passersby to sign a petition for her release, got to have their mom come home. But with clemency, you still have a felony record. It's not like a pardon. So because she had a felony record, she couldn't work in the medical field, couldn't live in public housing, was turned down for most jobs because she had to check the box, which maybe Karen will talk about a little more, saying that she had a felony conviction. So this mom, who had been, you know, a PTA mom and taken care of them, came home, but instead of taking care of her kids as they'd longed for, they are now taking care of her. And because we have such an elaborate system of post-prison punishment, people do come home sick, as the caller said, but they also come home still incapacitated.
So, Troy Lynn, so the daddy of your kids is sick, and you're still holding the family together?
Still holding, and I'm still going back to school.
Yeah. What makes it possible for you? Can you, if anyone's listening, what keeps you able to do this on a daily basis?
A lot of prayer.
A lot of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you have a church like I do, just get involved in it and have your pastor talk to you.
Let me ask you, do you tell people, do you feel okay about telling people that their daddy's in prison or was in prison?
I felt kind of embarrassed because, you know, I am in the medical field, and I do feel embarrassed sometimes. And my son gets embarrassed too, my oldest one.
Yeah.
He gets embarrassed when his friends hear that his daddy was in prison.
Yeah. And I wonder...
It's been a long struggle.
That's a really hard struggle because what happens is we don't get the help we need sometimes because we're too embarrassed to say anything.
You know what the hardest thing was? Was taking my kids into the prison.
Uh-huh.
That was the hardest thing. That is the most awful, awful journey in this whole wide world. You can't describe it any bad. I mean, standing out in the cold for hours, just waiting to get checked in and waiting for the bus to come pick you up.
Yeah. Karen, in Nell's book I read that. Karen, how do you help people with that?
Well, I think the kids get the help from the people who bring their children in and from the parents on the inside. It is really heartbreaking. I don't know, for me, watching the kids leave is even worse than watching the horrible lines coming in because these kids can't understand, whether it's their mother or their father who they're going to visit, suddenly they're not able to see them. And, you know, in county jails, most parents in most county jails in the state of California can't even touch their children when they're in county jail, that they're visiting behind glass. One time I literally watched a social worker, a CPS worker, pick up a six-month-old baby and stick a phone against her ear in order to talk to her mother. And, I mean, that is not parenting, and that's not family values.
Well, Troy Lynn, I really appreciate you having the courage to call in, and I want to say to people, if you want to call in and use another name, you can, but the fact that you've called in and used your name, and that the more we talk about this, the less shame there will be, and therefore we could then figure out how to help kids deal with this.
I just wanted to say something about visiting, because this is something I heard over and over from kids, and research supports it. Visiting your parent who's incarcerated is hard and awful. Not visiting is worse. And I just want to underline that, because I think sometimes we want to protect kids from that experience. But kids don't think, I didn't get to go see mom because it's a lousy environment. They think, she didn't love me, I'm not worth it. And there's no reason it has to be so scary and arduous. There are programs around the country where they've created lovely, child-friendly visiting environments.
Well, I'm going to send you a copy of Nell's book.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Parents need to take their children to see mom or dad, and it's very important when they are so little, as my 3.5-year-old was. He was only barely 3-4 months. I had to do it because I wanted him to know who his dad was and keep knowing who his daddy was. So when he got out in 3 years, he wouldn't say, who's this?
Yes. Exactly. Well, you know, I realize, besides the book, I want to send you something. I have some passes for the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Wow.
And, Monterey Bay Aquarium is this great place. You know, they have, I think it's Shark Day weekend on the 25th and 26th. They're also having bilingual programming on the 26th. And it's not cheap. It costs a few bucks to get in.
Yeah, I know.
So we will send you, a family pass. And I want you to have a great time with your kids, and keep listening, and thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Let's talk now with Ed in Oakland. Good morning, Ed. You're on Childhood Matters.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for waiting.
You kind of already mentioned what I was going to say about visiting a child is bad, but not visiting is worse.
Go ahead, say something more.
I work with youth. I'm actually a school teacher in Oakland, and I mentor, you know, we do the whole bit, and I really love kids and all this type of thing. And there was a couple of Christmases ago that we were involved with an organization that bought gifts, you know, for prison families, and we felt real good about it. And I really went all out because I didn't, you know, I don't have children, and I said, okay, I can just splurge, splurge, splurge. And I did that. I did that, and in my heart, I was thinking, wow, this kid's going to be so grateful to get all this great stuff, stuff I never got, stuff I wouldn't have got probably for my own children. But come to find out, the child, he did appreciate the gifts, but his father or whoever his mother had sent him, like, something they had made in the prison.
Yeah.
And... that's what they loved, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The toys and stuff, my things, they were like...
Well, that's an incredible story. And, of course, a personal gift from the parent would mean much more than anything that would come probably from other folks. And they never talk about nurseries here. The prison nursery is an interesting idea, as I mentioned in our book, Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice. The nursery is one alternative. There are about 7 of those in the United States now, perhaps a couple more by now since we did the book. There's some issues, though. You don't want a child in there, at least the places don't want them in there if they're very old. Usually the cutoff age is like 3, and the parent can't be serving more than 18 months. And what happens is when the child goes to the prison and lives in this nursery that's actually inside the prison, other inmates actually assist with the care of the child. They sort of work as like nannies. And, you know, prisons are prisons, and people are in there because they've been involved in criminal schemes and this type of thing. So sometimes there can be conflict among inmates. And I think once you got one child hurt or seriously hurt in one of these prison nurseries, that would probably end the program. But so far, that has not happened that I know of. So it's an interesting idea, and certainly we're glad that people like Nurse Renner and Nell Bernstein and people like that are working on this particular issue. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this week. Look on the show billing to see what we're going to be doing next week, and I'm sure that we'll meet again.
again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again, don't know where.